You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Mike Rader. Mike, thanks so much for being with me today.
Yeah, Brainerd, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So, Mike, let's talk about what you're working on at the moment. I imagine it's more than one thing or not, but what's involved in your world?
Yeah, right now I'm split between two projects, jumping back and forth, and it's kind of how I've adapted my working style, is that, and I think it allows me to, when I oversaturate myself in an area, I can jump to another area or keep my energy up. When my energy dips, as far as what I'm working on, I could sort of switch. It's not something that happened natural, but that's what my working method is. So right now I'm working on some paintings that were evolving from Mr. Potato Head. Do you remember Mr. Potato Head?
Sure.
So I started, to backtrack real quick, a lot of my work goes to digging back into my childhood and sort of taking these things that were placed into my mind and bringing them forward as an adult, and so that it's no longer this monologue and more of a dialogue, so I can reach back and sort of understand where a lot of these building blocks came from.
Right.
And I started making my own Mr. Potato Head shapes that I could sort of place on my face as this maybe a painting, hybrid sculpture. And maybe in the same way I was thinking about this, it was maybe the first sculpture I ever made was Mr. Potato Head. Like moving forms back and forth and replacing forms and changing the shape really quickly, almost like collage, which a lot of my work is collage-based.
So you mean using the original Mr. Potato Head was kind of like making a sculpture, your first sculpture?
Yeah, I do think it probably was my first sculpture, at least my first foray into sculpture, not necessarily putting eyes where they belong and seeing what things look like when you move them around and how the shapes change.
Right.
So I started placing these, making my own noses, my own eyes, my own ears, and placing them on my face as photographs, and then having the dialogue and taking these shapes and putting them into paintings. Like, so I have two spaces in the studio, one for the potato head photographs, and then right next to it, these paintings, and there's sort of a dialogue that goes back and forth between, I suppose, early childhood thoughts and thoughts about art right now, about sculpture and painting.
That's where you are now, and I'd like to hear about what the next thing is. You also maybe we should talk about a project that you did not long ago, where you chose to pull a vessel right to your first landing spot. That was it was exhibited fairly recently. That was called Push and Pull, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was, that's a good example of my working methods, I suppose, where I've developed a way to have, since I don't really land on a certain medium that I'm in love with, I just choose the medium that will best allow me to articulate what I want to talk about, and that ends up being a little bit of everything. So film, which I came to not that long ago, maybe about 8 years ago, allows me to then bring in sculpture, bring in drawing, bring in painting, bring in movement and editing and sound, and I can have this sort of whole ball of wax playground. And that piece was something I was invited back to where I went to undergrad, and they told me that I could do whatever I wanted. So I put in a proposal, and they said, you can't do that. So then I put in a second proposal, and they said, you can't do that. So
and what were those proposals?
They were so over the top. I just thought I would, for fun, put in. I wanted to encapsulate the whole printmaking studio in clay. It would be this giant pyramid. obviously completely impractical, but I was just seeing where the landing spot was, how soft the soft spot was. That school was a clay school. It was one of the ceramics dominates there. And then I wanted to build this giant, like 300-foot sailboat inside this pond that they have in the school, which is very small, so it would sort of dwarf the water. And it was a lake that was called Fake Lake that was built there, and then that was rejected. But the good thing is it actually forced me to get serious and really think about my education, how I handled that, and how I can sort of talk about that.
And so what did that evolve into? Is this the background of what actually happened with the...
That evolved into taking a vessel, which was a sailboat, and sort of misusing that, taking that vessel, and I pushed it from my original landing spot, my dorm, to the gallery. So it was taking something that is being misused and traveling from point A to point B, and that in the meantime, I was bringing things in and out of that vessel that were sort of representing memories and thoughts along the way that...
like what? You mean you were pulling things in and out of the vessel?
That's right, yeah. The piece was called Adjusting the Ballast. And, is that a kitty?
Yeah, it is. A kitty who talks a lot.
That's adorable. So it was more about adjusting the weight of dealing with all these feelings about going back and past and how that was to be there and to sort of sort all the years and battles I went through so far, so as an artist and as a human. So I was adjusting that weight as we took this journey from across the canvas to the gallery, which I was now invited to show at. But along the way, I could film it, I could bring in painting, I could bring in drawing, I could use all the mediums sort of at my disposal to flush out I guess you'd call it a narrative, it's a bit of a loose narrative along the way.
But the narrative was, I mean, that's really interesting in a recent work. I'd like to talk a little more about that. So that narrative, this is really a performance of what you're relating to as well as kind of shedding in a sense. Tell me more about like what you're pulling out and what you're pulling in, because that sounds critical to why you're walking from your dorm to the gallery with it, right?
Yeah, I kind of like the way you put it better than the way I put it. The narrative was essentially my thinking was this vessel being sort of misused, and that was a stand-in in a way for me as a student. But I didn't think of it beyond that. I like to sort of, I often have a beginning and sort of an end point where I might end up, and then the middle is really being present and how my thoughts are shifting along that way. So, you know, if I would script it the whole thing before I got there, then you're more of a tourist. And I wanted it to be more of a journey, and it can unfold however that happens. So the narrative sort of happens in real time, a lot of it.
You're bringing objects with you that you're also casting off in a sense, right?
Ah, so. That's right. Thank you for clarifying. Yeah, I make these paintings that are, they look like boulders or rocks. And they're sort of, I feel like they're stuffed with memories or thoughts and feelings. And they have some visual weight to them, even though they can be light. They could also appear heavy and feel heavy. So I was casting these feelings and thoughts in and out of the vessel, throwing them to the left and right as I'm pushing the boat across campus, and then running back and collecting what I felt was necessary. So the weight of the ship is being adjusted along the journey as I'm trying to be present in this push of the boat.
Right, so that's kind of a whole, that's the journey, that's kind of the life journey as well as you're saying, like the artist journey, but it's also specifically about kind of these memories or relationships with things from your past, right?
It is, But dealing with it in the present. So, you know, anything I'm dealing with in the past and the present is sort of abstract, because who knows how distorted these thoughts and feelings really are. So it's a lot easier to me to use language of shapes and symbols and color than actual words. It's, you know, as an artist, it's just more of your language that speaks truer than actually how I can articulate it, maybe.
Right.
So the shapes sort of represent or are, and I don't even want to use the word represent, but are those feelings and thoughts, just in a different language, more of a visual language than with words.
And are you also working on paintings at the moment?
Yeah, so I'm working on those potato head paintings, which are, they sort of peel off of Mr. Potato Head and take the 3D into the 2D world. And at the same time, I've started another film project that's based on the Three Stooges.
Tell me about that film project. That sounds interesting. So you're continuing, you're making these paintings, these obviously two-dimensional paintings of Mr. Potato Head, with different objects on them, I suppose, and not just the traditional ones that came in the box, right?
Right, right. They're like larger noses, colorful noses, shapes that kind of look like ears, or how far can you push that idea of an ear or an eye or a nose? And then does it have to necessarily be in the right spot that we're accustomed to? As I'm doing those, I'm trying to be aware of the problems or the paradoxes that come up as an artist that I wrestle with while I'm problem solving. And that sort of moves into the script that I'm doing with the Three Stooges film, which has been something I've been chipping away at for a year or two. I'm making costumes, and I've built a set in my studio, so the paintings are sort of hanging around this set, and then I'll have to make space for filming. And that came about, again, reaching back into my childhood. I made a few films this way. I made one when I inhabited Charlie Chaplin, and the Tramp was sort of making the series of paintings that were about characters in his film. I made one of a film about Ultraman. Ultraman was a Japanese TV show, sort of a kaiju TV show, and the journey of Ultraman making paintings through the creative process. And then I was watching the Three Stooges, and I started thinking of how much that sort of, I watched that as a kid, and that influenced me. But where I arrived at is, while flipping the channels, I was watching like a CSI, one of those police shows, and I realized the ensemble cast really adds up to one person. Like, you have the humorous one, the curious one, the angry one, the funny one, the sensitive person, and the whole ensemble adds up to one human. And I thought, I wonder if that's how we sort of relate to these shows. So maybe it's not so overwhelming. There's a lot to keep track of. It's sort of a sign, a characteristic to each person. So when I was watching the Three Stooges, you know, I was applying that sort of thought to them, and they sort of line up like the classic Freudian, the id, the ego, and the superego. Mo being the ego, Larry being the superego that balances the two, and Curly clearly being the id. And I, watching how they were solving problems as these aspects of like maybe one personality. And I thought, oh, I wonder how I solve paintings and work the creative process through different parts of my personality as they sort of negotiate the creative process. So I thought about using the Three Stooges as this vehicle to make a painting where I could inhabit each one of the Stooges, and one could be the ego, one could be the superego, one could be the id, as they're trying to paint a circle, but it keeps coming out a square.
It's a film you're making with them.
That is, yeah. That is.
So the film
I've been working on...
Yeah.
Go ahead, Brian.
No, no, go on. So the film, so that was the painting and how you're exploring it, but the film was also, they were actually doing that. You're creating these scripts. How does the film work? Or they're making the painting.
Right, so I developed the character of each, but sort of pushed it in a different direction. Like Mo, again, will be the ego, but to represent Mo, he's more of a square, and he's red. I'm using sort of primary shapes and colors to identify each one of the stooges so that they're sort of building blocks towards making this painting. And Mo has a square sort of shape wig instead of his traditional shaped hair. Larry is more of a triangle, so his head goes into more of a triangle, and Curly's going to be a circle, kind of representing his bald head as well. So I've worked on these costumes to sort of distill them down into building blocks, but also to keep their personality somewhat separate, and all three of them will end up sort of representing one person going through this creative process. And it's going to be a film to develop, I'll say, a little bit of a loose script, because again I have the starting point, but the middle is I'll work out as I'm filming it. I watched about 63 Stooges films, and I use their actual voices, I'll use as my voice in the script. So I write down things that they say that might be relevant. For instance, there's one episode where Mo is talking about the negative and Curly's talking about the positive, and it's obviously nothing to do with art, but I'll be able to fold that into what I'm thinking about as far as making work goes. And why I need to have the other thing going on, the painting aspect, is because while I'm working on paintings on the other side of the studio, these things that I run into daily, that sort of gets folded into the scripts. So kind of like the boat piece, whatever, I try to stay present, and it's sort of about the journey, not necessarily about following a prescribed path.
And so the things that get folded into the piece, though, are what? Those are everything from events in your life to political events, or what's the limit on what gets folded into the...
Yeah, no, I don't. That's a good question, too, Brenner. I don't really have limits on that. We'll see what happens daily. On the Ultraman piece, it was, again, I came into the studio, and it was like the lead character was trying to paint this portrait of Ultraman, but I would sort of bring in what I was wrestling with those days as far as formal concerns or conceptual concerns, and that became part of the story. So it'll be the same situation with the Three Stooges. So there's nothing sort of off limits, but other than what I'm facing in the day, and then I can edit later as I sort of chop it down into something that makes a little bit more of a cohesive body.
Right, that makes sense. And so before we go, let me just ask you, what happens with the current work with these films? Is there a place that they'll be shown? What's the next step for some of the things that you're making?
Yeah, right now I'm working on the paintings and the potato head photos for a show at a new gallery here that's not as in Brooklyn. That'll be in spring. And the film is a little bit harder of a place to find a home. I've shown them at like film festivals and the Brooklyn Film Festival, Manhattan Film Festival here. And it's a little harder to have a home for those because they've walked this sort of balance between, I wouldn't go so far as call them entertainment, but they push towards that world, and yet they work towards the art world, I guess you'd say, where they can become more abstract and not necessarily for popular consumption. So that's sometimes been a harder place for me to find a home for those. The film festival put you in the experimental category, which is really like putting you in the corner. A lot of film festivals have experimental categories, and it feels like it's more for street cred reasons than... And I don't know how serious they actually take that.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting. That's like putting it in the corner because it's a kind of a catch-all category a little bit, right?
It is. It's a bit ignored.
And so one other question. What else do you do? It seems like a lot of this, of course, isn't in the marketplace, right? I mean, some of the films or objects may be, but your work seems like it's not that easy to collect. How is this funded, or is it through it being collected?
It's funded is usually, it's a matter of trying not to lose money when you make artwork, but it's something I love to do. It's something I've always sort of gravitated towards and done my whole life, and it is my language, so right now I'm teaching at a few places, so that money sort of also funnels into the artwork as
right.
well.
And what are you reading at the moment? I'm always curious what everyone's reading.
Right now I'm chipping away at Macbeth again, because I'm experimenting with doing a little film about it with paintings playing parts of Macbeth. So the copy that I have has the text on one side, and then sort of on the other side of the page it has some translation so you could understand the old English a little bit better. I wouldn't call it necessarily Shakespeare for Dummies, but it might be Shakespeare for Dummies, so you could, all the words that you can't sort of put together, it does for you. So I've been working with this idea of having paintings interact and playing the characters, but playing both parts of the page, meaning the original text and then a other character who can't quite understand the text and is having trouble sort of distilling the information. So that's kind of what I'm chipping away at.
Mike, thanks so much for talking to me today. It's really been a pleasure.
Yes, and thank you, Brainerd. I enjoyed it. I appreciate you asking me.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.